Hello, my name is Simon Whitehouse, London Walks Guide and London Blue Badge Guide. Now, at the moment, due to this blessed virus, we can't take you on the walks, but that doesn't stop us because we can at least bring the walks to you. And the walk that I'd like to take you on today is a virtual walk of one of the oldest continuously inhabited areas of London, and that's Covent Garden. So sit back, relax, and use your imaginations as I take you on the walk. We start the walk outside Covent Garden Tube Station at the top of James Street. Now, when you hear the name Covent Garden, what do you think of? Maybe some people remember the fruit and vegetable market. Some of you will think of Eliza Doolittle selling flowers in My Fair Lady. And some of you might think of the Royal Opera House, which is one of the world's leading theatres and home to world-class opera and ballet. Well, Covent Garden is all of those things and more, and we're going to weave these threads into our walk today. Now, one thread that runs through the area and London's history as a whole is trade, and that's really where our story begins. There's been trade in this area since the earliest times. The area was settled by the Saxons between the 7th and the 9th centuries AD when it was known as London Vic or London Market. Now, how do we know that? Well, in the 1990s, during the redevelopment of the Royal Opera House, archaeologists discovered a Saxon main road, side streets, and buried treasure, a hoard of Saxon coins with the name Londonvic stamped on them. And if you want to go and see evidence of that, you can visit the Museum of London, where they're on display. Speaking of streets, names of streets are clues to the history of any area. And if we look across from the tube station, we can see the street name Long Acre. And that's a reminder that by the Middle Ages, this was a strip of land and part of the market garden once owned by the Benedictine monks at Westminster Abbey and known as the Convent Garden. Now you see where the area gets its name. We're going to head a little bit further south along James Street to the corner of Floral Street. And you're going to look up and be absolutely astonished at this glass and steel concertina-shaped structure that links two buildings together. It was completed in 2003 by Wilkinson Air Architects, and it's a graceful homage to the world of ballet. It links the Royal Ballet School on one side of Floral Street with the Royal Opera House on the other. And graduating dancers all, of course, aspire to be offered a coveted place in the Royal Ballet Company next door, and thus the structure is known rather wonderfully as the Bridge of Aspiration. But the dancers, of course, have renamed it the Bridge of Perspiration. I now want you to imagine looking down this street during the 18th century, because there were no fewer than 11 taverns on this road and as many unlegislated brothels concentrated towards the sort of further end of the street. The majority of them were male brothels, which were known as molly houses. At the time, the death penalty was in force for sodomy, but juries on the whole were very reluctant to pass sentence, and so normally it meant a brief spell in the pillory if you were homosexual. Now, this homosexual underworld in Covent Garden was observed by the contemporary writer Ned Ward, who wrote in the London Spy in 1709 the following: 'Tis strange that in a country where our ladies are so kind and fair, gay and lovely to the sight, so full of beauty and delight, that men should on each other dote and quit the charming petticoat. Who could women's charms refuse and such a beastly practice use?'" We're going to continue now down to the corner of James Street to catch our first glimpse of the Piazza, the beating heart of Covent Garden, with its magnificent 19th century market building. And if we look up, we can see a triangular section at the top of the building and a coat of arms. And the coat of arms are the coat of arms of the Russell family. And to our right is a row of buildings flanking the north side of the Piazza, known as Bedford Chambers. Now, these two names, Russell and Bedford, link us nicely to the next part of the story. In 1540, in the aftermath of his break with the Roman Catholic Church, King Henry VIII, who is now the head of the church, seized the Convent Garden from the monks at Westminster, and he gave the land to the powerful and influential Russell family, who in time will become earls and eventually the Dukes of Bedford. They don't do much with the land until the 1620s, the reign of King Charles I, when the fourth Earl of Bedford decides to indulge in a little bit of property speculation. And he works with the classical architect Inigo Jones, and together they develop the first planned residential square in London, known as it still is today as the Piazza, with three blocks of magnificent Italian townhouses on three sides of the square and his own townhouse, Bedford House, on the south side, completed around 1639. And the Piazza remained fashionable until the late 1660s, but the Great Fire of London in 1666, which you heard about on Sean's podcast, resulted in many people migrating westward from the medieval walled city and setting up market stalls along the wall of the Earl of Bedford's house. And I don't think the great and the good of the square were terribly pleased about this, so they start to head further west, and gradually what we see is the development of more squares, including St James Square, Leicester Square, Soho Square, but Covent Garden was the first, the original London Square. We're going to now walk ahead a little bit, straight into the covered market building. Although some kind of market existed here even in the 1630s, it was in 1670 that the Earl of Bedford received a royal charter from King Charles II to hold a daily fruit, vegetable and flower market, which eventually covered the entire area. And for the next 300 years, it was the most famous market in England. In 1974, for various reasons, including overcrowding and congestion, it moved to its present location as New Covent Garden Market at 9 Elms in Vauxhall. But I really want you to imagine for a moment this market in the middle of the 19th century, when London's population was around 2.5 million people. Saturday was the busiest day of the market, and it would have been filled with street vendors known as costermongers. Now, costermongers, it's a strange word. Custards were a type of medieval apple, now extinct, and mongers were sellers, so costermongers. And they sold from barrows or carts pulled by donkeys, and they sold every kind of fruit and vegetable, eventually, that you can imagine. The inimitable Charles Dickens, who was the greatest storyteller of London, knew Covent Garden like the back of his hand. And he uses the market as a location in virtually every novel. In Little Dorrit, he describes the market as a place of past and present mystery, romance, abundance, want, beauty, ugliness, fair country gardens and foul street gutters all confused together. The master himself, Noel Coward, references the market in the first verse of his 1941 song and love letter to London entitled London Pride. London pride has been handed down to us. London pride is a flower that's free. London pride means our own dear town to us, and our pride it forever will be. Woe, Liza, see the costa barrows, vegetable marrows and the fruit piled high. Woe, Liza, little London sparrow, Covent Garden market where the costers cry. Now, by the 18th century, many of the grand townhouses once occupied by gentlemen were now divided into tenements, teeming with prostitutes, and the Piazza became known rather wonderfully as the Square of Venus. And just like you might pick up Time Out magazine today for restaurant or theatre recommendations, you would pick up Harris's list of Covent Garden ladies, which listed the ladies, their addresses and their special services. And it was described as the essential guide and accessory for any serious gentleman of pleasure. A sort of 18th century version of Tinder, I suppose. One of my favourite entries from the guide is that of Betsy Miles, who lived just around the corner on Henrietta Street. And here is her description. Known for her immense-sized breasts, which she alternately makes use of with the rest of her parts. She is what you may call backwards and forwards. All are equal to her, posteriors not excepted. Nay, indeed, by her own account, she has most pleasure in the latter. Entrance at the front door, tolerably reasonable, but nothing less than £2 for the back way. Now, the guide went out of business in 1795 due to a crackdown on immoral publications, but it's still available in all good bookshops, including Waterstones on nearby Garrick Street. Now, sadly, none of the original 17th century townhouses survive, but happily, one original building does survive on the west side of the piazza, and that is the Church of St. Paul's, Covent Garden. So now let's head west through the market to get a glimpse of it. We're now looking at the portico of St. Paul's Church, Covent Garden, designed by Inigo Jones in 1633 at a cost of £4,000. It seems that the Earl of Bedford wasn't terribly keen on spending money on churches, and he said to Inigo Jones, "Build me nothing better than a barn." To which Jones, perhaps slightly offended, says, "You shall have the handsomest barn in London." In 1795, the church was damaged by fire, but it was restored in its original style, which you can clearly see is a classical Roman temple. If we move under the portico, we can see a central alcove that's been blocked in. Now, this should have been the original entrance, where the great and the good were to enter up a staircase and through a door under the portico. But it came to the Bishop of London's attention that the congregation would in fact be facing in a westward, and therefore the wrong, direction. So the original entrance was blocked up, and the entrance is still today via the churchyard behind the church. If we look slightly to the left of the alcove, we can see an inscription that tells us that the 17th century diarist Samuel Pepys recorded the first rendition of an Italian puppet play, which was the forerunner of Punch and Judy shows. And if you don't know what Punch and Judy is, well, it's sort of an everyday story of domestic violence, really. And every year in May, a service is held at the church for the puppeteers of London. So that's lovely. The tradition still continues today. Samuel Pepys, of course, provided us with compelling eyewitness accounts of London's events, including the Great Plague of 1665, very topical, and the Great Fire of 1666. One really wonders what he would have had to say about the coronavirus. And the theme of entertainment still continues today. So the portico is now used as the backdrop for the various street entertainers who perform for the congregating crowds, and they can't just pitch up in Covent Garden, they have to go through a rigorous audition process. And in fact, the comedian and actor Eddie Izzard cut his teeth performing right here in Covent Garden in front of the church. But for many people, the portico of the church is best remembered as the setting for the opening scene of George Bernard Shaw's play Pygmalion. Pygmalion is the story of Eliza Doolittle, a lowly Cockney flower girl who meets a professor of phonetics by the name of Professor Henry Higgins. And he lays a bet that by changing the way that Eliza speaks and behaves, he can pass her off as a duchess at an embassy ball in just 6 months' time. Now, in 1956, the play was transformed into one of the greatest stage musicals of all time, My Fair Lady, starring Julie Andrews as Eliza Doolittle and Rex Harrison as Professor Higgins. In 1964, the church, the buildings, and even the cobblestones of Covent Garden were all recreated in a soundstage of Warner Brothers Studios to give us the musical film version starring Audrey Hepburn as Eliza. And of course, I'm sure now you've all got that song humming in your heads. All together now. All I want is a room somewhere far away from the cold night air. With one enormous chair, oh, wouldn't it be lovely? And I'm sure you're all going to rush now and find your copy of My Fair Lady and sit down and revel in it. Now, in the next instalment of this podcast, we'll visit the church, entering, of course, via the back way. And let's hope the rector, Simon, doesn't follow the practice of our Covent Garden lady and charge us extra to do so.